Well, hello there, and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, in a program heard most Fridays at MSO News Sports. Not all the time. Had a bit of a family emergency last week, but everything worked out fine. So we had to cancel that show, and I apologize to Josh and our guests for that. And I do believe those guests have been reinstated for today.
That's correct. We have Ellen Bachrach, the executive director of the Newburyport Art Association. First, and Bob Gillis, new president of the Cape Ann Savings Bank, will be joining us. And Amanda Orlando will be here. Amanda Orlando Kestis will be here, who's seeking an office within the Republican Party that recently became vacated when somebody left the state.
Okay, all of that coming up and more on MSO News Sports.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Roger Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Elena Bachrach, the Executive Director of the Newburyport Art Association. Elena, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Josh.
Well, we usually start out and say, give us the bio and tell us, our listening audience, a little bit about your background, and then we can talk about some of the things you do with the association.
All right. Well, thank you for your interest. My background is a rather eclectic one. I don't come by my position from a formal art or art history training, but rather through higher ed administration that morphed into arts administration. I have a graduate degree from Northwestern University in political economy and African studies, and decided not to pursue a tenure track position, but rather began a career in the late 80s in higher ed administration. Took me to the New School and eventually to Bennington College, and I really think that it was during those years at Bennington that I began to wisen up to the magic and necessity and benefit of the arts in our life, and was inspired by many faculty members at Bennington who are practicing artists, teachers, and began to look at problems in the world in a different way. More creative, less worried about failure, willing to take chance, not for the sake of taking a chance, but because it opened up other answers and possibilities. And so after my time at Bennington, my family and my husband's career took us to other places, and I had a wonderful stint at the Greenville County Museum of Art in Greenville, South Carolina, for over 3 years, where I was asked to reinvent the education arm at the museum, which had been somewhat disconnected to the life in the galleries. And so I made it my mission to try and connect those two things, and enjoyed that work very much, and worked again very closely with artists who were obviously instructors in the program. We returned to Boston. My husband's from Boston. And I thought I might pursue higher ed again because we were in Boston after all, but took a very different turn and went into business with some custom cabinet makers and helped them create and open a studio for their business, which was very interesting. I had never really been in my own business before, and so I learned a lot from doing that, and I learned about things that I didn't want to do, and so began to look for the next thing. And as it happened, the Newburyport Art Association was looking for a new executive director, and it's been a great fit for me, and I am now about to complete year 7. So it's gone by very fast, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
That's great. Tell us about what the Newburyport Art Association does, how it works, what it's involved in, and exhibits. You and I talked earlier, and I know that there are different types of exhibits, and if you could...
Right. So I'll start by saying that we're an open art association, which means to be a member here, you don't have to be, your work doesn't have to be juried in for you to become a member. You simply decide on the level of membership that best suits you and your art, and how productive you imagine you're going to be. There are different options, which we can get into if you want to. But having said that, the organization, the Art Association, sponsors open and juried shows. So the distinction is that an open show is an opportunity for artists to submit up to 2 works, and whatever they submit is in fact installed in that show. A juried show, by contrast, is juried by an outside juror, whom I generally invite to serve in that role, and that person, he or she, looks at a wide array of works and decides which ones will in fact be included in the show. So the show is juried by that person. Sometimes it's a team. And I've sought out individuals who might be involved in galleries, who might be involved in art through academia, or are connected to a museum. I try to kind of mix up the jurors over time, just so that the artists then are having a different experience with different jurors.
In the context of those people that you select, what are they looking for when they decide?
So I think they're looking for a certain level of rigor. An artist has an idea about an image, about a composition, about color, about perspective. They're going to look at the imaginative idea that the artist has rendered, but also how well have they executed. And on top of that, there are other layers. So, for example, we sponsor art in 11 different media, and we are going to look to vary the show across those media. Let's say we get X number of works. I might say to the juror, the galleries can handle Y number of works. If I would recommend then that you select so many from each of these media categories. And that's really how the show kind of comes together. The magic piece is that every juror is different. So
sure.
Every juror is bringing to their juring their own sensibilities, right, about art, and even about the entire body of work that they are now being asked to choreograph, essentially. So they might have, in looking at the work, suddenly an idea forms in their mind about what the entire show might look like. So they might be thinking, too, about relationships among the pieces. So there are a number of factors that go into that process, which is what makes it so interesting and rich every time.
Sure.
We are roughly a 600-member art association. We sponsor anywhere between 35 to 40 shows a year, which is a lot of work behind the scenes, but I like the vitality that that brings to this art association. Our mission is really 3 parts. It's exhibition, which we've talked about now for a few minutes, education, and community outreach. So we sponsor classes and workshops throughout the year. Part of what I do, of course, is raise money for the organization, and some of that work is through grants, and we, through grant support, have 2 community outreach programs. One is Op Art, which has been in place here for about 15 years now. It's coordinated by one of our board members, and it is a partnership with Opportunity Works in Newburyport. So we offer art education on a weekly basis at 2 of their sites for adults with special needs. The other piece, our other community outreach program, is called Art Link, and really that's an umbrella name for all the programming we do with schools in the area. And that programming takes different forms every academic year, depending on what the students and teachers might want to work with us on. It's classes and workshops here or classes and workshops in the schools. We also mentor, for example, the Newburyport High School has a National Art Honor Society that is very well subscribed. I think they have over 60 members. And we mentor that organization by helping them with activities they're planning in the school. We also host a show for their senior members every year. We've been involved in their induction ceremonies as speakers. And that's been a very fruitful partnership. We have a very well-subscribed exhibition every year, generally the month of March. It's our Young and Budding Artist Show, and we exhibit 125 works, roughly, that's the number every year, by young artists, grades 1 through 12, and each artist is has the opportunity to submit one work. And that's really a highlight in our calendar. The opening for that show is quite something. As you might imagine, all the young artists bring their friends and family, so sure. it's a fun afternoon. So we are a busy place, and we like to keep it that way. So,
what people who, when you have an art show, do you
yes.
How do you decide, or do you decide? Is it a mix of different things? You mentioned you draw from 11 different mediums, but would you, for example, say we're going to focus on color, or we're going to focus on seascapes, or we're going to focus
yes.
on?
So we the quick answer to your question is that no, we don't organize shows around themes. We have a fall open, we have a two-part fall jury, we have a holiday show that's geared obviously towards holiday retail, we have a winter two-part juried, a spring open, and our most prestigious show, which is on view now, is our regional juried show. Just to give you a sense, we've received 530 entries for this show, and we have 180 pieces hanging in the show itself. So it's a very competitive process. However, occasionally, the calendar gives us an opportunity to be creative and maybe introduce a special show. And those might be thematic. So examples of what I mean in recent years, a couple of years ago, Newburyport was celebrating its 250th anniversary. And so we hosted a show called The Portraits of Newburyport. And we invited members and non-members, so it was a way to extend out into the community, to submit portraits of historical or contemporary figures who have been important to Newburyport in one way or another. And it was a fantastically successful show, and it brought in audiences that perhaps had never even been in the building before. Recently, this spring, we did a show called The Art of Books, where a book needed to be the genesis for the artwork, and we scheduled that alongside the Newburyport Literary Festival, which uses the Art Association as one of their venues every year for readings. So that was a really nice coupling. And I should mention parenthetically that one of the things I'm personally interested in fostering for the organization are organic partnerships with other cultural institutions in our community. And so we've partnered with the Firehouse, with the Actors Studio, with the Lit Festival. And over since my time being here, we've done a few of those partnerships. So that's to give you a sense. Did I answer your question, Josh?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Lessons. Someone wants to take a lesson. They're not really. Maybe it's a hobby. Maybe it's a mm-hmm. developing hobby. How would they go about that?
Well, simply by visiting our website is probably the simplest place. On the navigation bar, there's a tab for education and all the current listings. We obviously keep that up to date. The website's very interactive, so they can register through the website or by calling the gallery and registering over the phone. We offer sort of a panoply of classes throughout the year. Some of the better subscribed have been oil painting, drawing, watercolor. We've had a paint class recently on abstract painting. We then do some specialized workshops around perhaps specific techniques, or just the other day on Sunday, we had a wonderful talk and demo with Donald Journey, who's a very noted American painter who lives in our area. So there are a variety of opportunities, and I have to say we've started, because some of our instructors have now developed followings, that we've kind of created series for certain media. So, for example, in drawing, there are a couple of different levels, same perhaps in watercolor. And we're fairly nimble here, so we can respond pretty quickly to requests from students for new classes, or, frankly, requests from instructors who might want to try something new, too. So the website is probably the best resource. That leads me to mention that I haven't mentioned it. We've had two capital efforts underway. We wrapped up the capital campaign for the Range Lights Community Sculpture Garden last year and unveiled the first outdoor sculpture exhibition right behind our building. And so that's been a great addition to the facility, and it's a great community amenity. It's basically an open space with gorgeous, I think there are 9 sculptures in place now. The exhibitions will be annual, and they will run for an entire year. And that's a juried process. We are also, because we're talking about education, we are investigating the possibility of being able to renovate and perhaps expand our facility here so that we might be able to do more on the classes and workshops front than we're able to now. So that's an effort that is currently underway, and we're excited about.
So a capital campaign, so you'll be looking into raise funding for that? And
we would have to, right. We haven't announced a campaign, but we're doing that investigative and exploratory work right now.
Great. Okay. And what kind of money are you looking at, or is it too early to say?
I think it's too early to say. Yeah, I think it's premature. We're really at the very beginning stages. We've just hired an architecture firm to do a feasibility study on the building, so that will tell us a lot.
Yeah, they'll give you.
We should know a lot more in 6 months.
So, what other programming that you do would be coming up, or special events, or things that are ongoing now that you?
Thank you for asking. I would certainly recommend to your listeners that they make a trip to see the regional juried show. It's going to be on view through June 3rd. I might mention that our galleries are open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 5, and Sunday, 1 to 5. But also, our biggest special event of the year is right around the corner. Saturday, June 10th, is our annual art auction and party. And it will be comprised of 70 lots in the live auction, and we have, I think, nearly 50 art and non-art packages in the silent auction. It's a great night. We tent over the sculpture garden, which creates a wonderful atmosphere, and it's the biggest fundraiser for us of the year. So there are a few tickets still left, so if any listeners are interested, they, again, can purchase tickets through the website.
You mentioned,
I might mention, is newburyportart.org.
Okay, great. We've talked a bit about paintings and other mediums. Do you have how much sculpture is there, is a part of what you do?
So sculpture is obviously a part of what we do, but it's probably a smaller group of artists who work in sculpture. And, of course, the sculptures for the sculpture garden are a particular kind of sculpture because they need to be outdoors and are generally larger pieces. And so that call for artwork for the sculpture garden is actually open to non-members as well, because we also really see the garden as a community asset. We have some wonderful sculptors in the Art Association, but certainly if you look at the numbers across the media, it's probably a smaller group, certainly compared to oil painters, which always tends to be the biggest group.
Well, I mentioned sculpture because my older brother has been historically an estate manager and worked on the estate Mrs. Weems in Manchester, who was quite a sculpturist, and very interesting story that I'd share with you another time. But
amazing
works that she had. And she left all of her money to the arts, which was interesting.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Very nice.
About $250 million, but yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and certainly wish you the very best with your pending capital campaign, but also the exhibits and all the good work you're doing with the children and the students at Newburyport High and the special needs adults and so forth.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your interest and was delighted to be asked to be on the show.
Great. Take care now.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
NewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players, exclusive video interviews following the big games, live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball, live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is the president of the Cape Ann Savings Bank, Mr. Bob Gillis. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Josh. I appreciate it. Great to be here.
We usually start in and just say, give us your bio. I mean, I know you since we were kids together, but tell our listening audience about your growing up and your family, your background, and so forth.
Oh, sure. I grew up here in Gloucester, Mass. Of course, I'm not a native. I've only been here since I was two, and real Gloucester natives know who's a native and who's not, but grew up here, had a very happy childhood. My dad was the pro at Bass Rocks Golf Club for 37 years, and that's where I started my first job and worked right through high school. And went to college, graduated from Northeastern University. I'm married. I have three children. That's my basic background. I started here at the bank in October of 1975. So do the math. I've been here for 41 years.
Wow.
I've been very fortunate. This is a great organization, and I'm enjoying my new position. We've got a great board, and my predecessor Bucky Rogers was instrumental in my success, and he's been instrumental in the transition of his presidency to mine.
Great. Now, banking when you started in 1975 and banking today are probably two different creatures in lots of different ways. Walk us through some of that progression and how it's changed in your view and in relation to the customers who are part of the Cape Bend Savings Bank community.
Oh, sure, yeah. And I guess there have been lots of different changes. There was a regulation called Regulation Q going back 35 years ago and beyond, in which interest rates were capped on deposit accounts. In other words, we couldn't pay more than, if I remember right, 5.25% on a regular savings account back then. And then what happened was the Glass-Steagall Act changed, and interest rates all of a sudden it was the wild, wild west, because banks could pay anything they wanted for interest rates, and they could also charge what they wanted up to the usury rate, which is 18%. So there have been a lot of changes as far as interest rates go, you know, beyond that, I guess the biggest change over the last 30 years is the online aspect of banking. You know, as time has gone on, you see fewer and fewer people coming through the lobbies of banks, and that's because so many people are banking online now. And you know, you take the typical third of the month, you'd see lines out the door because people are cashing Social Security checks, pension checks, things like that. And now, you know, those checks are being sent automatically. And so much is done online that it's really changed the face of the industry. But face-to-face is still an important aspect of this business. And as a community bank, I think that's one of our real strengths.
I notice, I see your ads on cable television. Love the one with shows all the different scenic, and they run it in fast motion, but all the scenic things of Gloucester. And you've had some really interesting advertising over the years.
Yes, yeah.
The ads that Bucky Rogers' kids, you know, talking about, you know, it looked like they were playing baseball or something, and they're talking about banking, and it was some really creative stuff, but it catches.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's, I think the message that we really want to convey is community banking and, you know, personal service. You know, people want to know who they're dealing with. We want to know who we deal with. And we know our customers. Our market area primarily is Cape Ann, Gloucester, Rockport, Essex, and Manchester, and that's the vast majority of what we do. So we get to know our customers. And in this day and age, it's an important thing. You know, as banking becomes more and more impersonal, so much of it is online, that personal touch is, I think it's becoming more important. And so we really try to focus on that.
Bob, I've got two points I want you to comment on. One is that Cape Ann Savings Bank has been a steady fixture down at the bottom of Main Street in Gloucester for many years. A lot of the banks, the buildings on Main Street are the same, but the owners have changed many, many times over. And that's one aspect. And the second aspect, you just talked about community and personal. I'd like to know where the culture comes from in your bank, where I've noticed that when Harold Rogers, when Bucky Rogers was president, your president, you guys, A, are approachable, and B, You don't hide. You're right out there in the middle of the fray. You're out in the jungle with the troops. And then the other thing is that, you know, you take your turn doing things, getting your hands dirty. And I'd like to know where that comes from, because I'm not sure that you see that in a hierarchy.
Sure. Yep. No, good questions, Rick. To the first point, we were established in 1846, so we've been around for a while, for sure. And I think what it is as a mutual savings bank. Mutual savings bank have traditionally been somewhat conservative, so we have maintained that conservative tradition. And the good thing about being a conservative financial institution is that we're looking after our depositors' money, and that's really what it's been about. We don't take crazy risks like you read about with the subprime lending that happened a few years back, and all the different schemes and scams that are going on out there. We stick with tried and true financial organization, and we stick to our knitting. We do what we do, and we try to do it well. And we don't get involved with a lot of other schemes. That's all, I guess, is the way to put it. So we've always been conservative. We're rock solid. We're very strong. We've got a great surplus position, and that's in the interest of taking care of our depositors and our customers. So that was a long winded answer to the question about why we've been here and the other owners seem to change over time. Mm-hmm. But as far as the community part of it, again, that's where we've always been. You know, we're going to bump into you in the supermarket, down the building center, wherever it is. We know our customers, and we care about our customers, and we want to be involved in the organizations that benefit the community, and we encourage that throughout the bank for all of us, and I think it works well. You're going to see us, you know, all over the place, and we're here in this community, and you know, you're not going to probably see us in Boston or Wakefield or Providence, Rhode Island, wherever it is, but you're going to see us on Cape Ann, and we want to be involved, and you know, we want to help make the community a better place. So,
well, to go along with that, Bob, the idea that that Bucky Rogers and now Bob Gillis, you guys have, if I could use the phrase, risen from the ranks. I think that probably makes for better family relationship, I would think, within the core of the bank. In other words, some of my former students, many of my former students, have been in that bank for a long time. Once somebody's there, they don't leave.
Yeah, it's a stability factor. Again, I think in this day and age where mergers and consolidation are the order of the day, and you're seeing more and more community banks go away, and you know, for a number of different reasons, you know, the costs of running this type of a business that just keep escalating, and that's something that affects us too. You know, we have to deal with that all the time, but it's really about stability. People, I think, are looking for some stability. They're craving stability because you don't find it in so many other places. You hear about the Wells Fargo scam and you know, some of these other things that are going on, and you look at it and you say, who do you trust now? I mean, it's
it's nice to
think that you can trust us.
You mentioned community, being a community bank, but in addition to that, you're also involved in the community. Bucky Rogers was always involved in Little League and countless other organizations, and I know you're involved in several yourself, the Housing Land Group and Rotary and some others. Tell us a little bit about your community involvement.
Sure. Yeah. It's something. On top of it, I feel it's an obligation as a community banker to get involved in the community organizations and activities. But really, from my own standpoint, I enjoy it. You know, Rotary is fun. We're doing something good for the community, doing something good for the world, and you're doing it with people that are like-minded, and it's
and
it's
you still manage
terrific.
To go into the water on Polar Plunge Day every year, and have to note that. And but
yeah, what's not fun about that, Josh? You know,
well, I did it the first 3 years, and after that it got vetoed at home. But if I was in as better as good a shape as you are, I'm sure they'd let me go in again.
Well, I might smarten up one of these years. I don't know, but you know, I just enjoy being involved, whether it's the YMCA, the different housing groups. It's important. You know, I think we all try to do what we can to make the community a better place to live, and it's in addition to it being an obligation, it's fun. I mean, I'm fortunate to live in this community. We have great people here. You know, looking to accomplish the same things, and it's fun working on these projects to just make us a better community. So, and I, you know, again, getting back to the bank part of it, I'm so very fortunate to be part of this organization because it's built right into our strategic plan that we're going to remain an independent community bank. In other words, we can't be bought by someone else. You see it happen all the time, but we can't be bought because we're a mutual savings bank. We're owned by our depositors. So no matter if Bank of America decided we're going to gobble up KPN Savings Bank, well, they can't do it.
That's great.
And we intend to keep that model, you know, forever. So I'm very, very fortunate to be part of an organization like that because I have colleagues in the business that they're always looking over their shoulder, worrying about, you know, their quarterly numbers to make sure they're going to make the cut for the next quarter. And it's a tough way to do business.
When a bank puts an ATM machine somewhere, what is some of the thinking that goes into that? Is that does that cost you guys money? Is it?
Yes. Yeah, it does. It's, you know, it's not really a money maker, but the thinking is purely convenience. You're trying to make banking more convenient for your customers, and that's. That's really what it is, Josh. There's not much else to it. It's not something we do to help the bottom line, but ultimately, if you're making business more convenient for your customers, and that's gonna help you in total.
Do you see people saving more now than other times in history?
Well, in different ways. You know, we really encourage people to save. It's so important. Starting in the schools, we have a program in the elementary schools in Gloucester, Manchester, and Rockport. It's called Savings Makes Sense. And every elementary class has access to this program, and basically what we do is we put the first $5 into these kids' accounts, and every week the teacher encourages them to bring their passbook in with whatever they're going to put into the bank, $1, $0.50, $2, $5, whatever it is. And what we do is we reward them with these little plastic pigs, which I should probably describe them better than that, but that's the best I can do right now. The kids love them,
yeah.
And so that's where we try to start them young. You know, thinking in terms of paying themselves. That's what the saving is all about. So that's what we really try to breed that culture.
I remember hearing years ago, it's not how much you make, it's how much you save of what you make.
Absolutely, Josh. I mean, you and I know plenty of people that make a lot of money, and they don't have anything to show for it other than, you know, cars, boats, houses, whatever it is, and it doesn't matter how much you make. You know, everybody can save.
Well, I remember back,
help your own future.
You know, I follow history and politics and so forth, David Stockton, guy that was the battled budget director for Ronald Reagan, he noted at the beginning of the 92 presidential campaign, he said that people within, 25 to 45 year age bracket were putting more money, paying down their debt on credit cards. And he said that would be potentially fatal for the incumbent George Bush, because it would hurt the economy. And I found that interesting, and it actually proved out to be that, because the people, in paying down your debt, you're not spending money, you're not putting money into the economy and so forth. And I wonder in the context of saving, how you people see those fluctuations up and down and so forth.
Sure. I think, part of it is that the consumer drives the economy. I think two-thirds of the economy is consumer-driven. So if consumers aren't spending, there's going to be a problem there. It can directly result in recession. But to me, there has to be a balance. I mean, if consumers are spending, they're also taking on more debt, and there has to be a balance there. The savings is just as important as the spending, if not more so. They're always looking at GDP growth, a healthy GDP growth is 3 to 3.5 to 4%. But that comes with a lot of debt oftentimes, and it might not just be coming from earnings. So there's a balance there, and the savings has to play at least as important a role as the spending does.
Do you find that kids of today's era are as mindful of the problems that ensue with running up big credit cards, debts?
I'm not sure. I mean, we try to... Our little institution tries to really promote that awareness.
Yeah.
We really do, because credit cards are very, very dangerous. It's too easy. People can have terrific credit records, pay their debts, and then it just gets too easy to, when you pay your debts on time, more people, more banks, more companies want to lend you money, so it just makes more debt available to you, and it becomes too easy to run that debt up and cause problems. And to a different degree, it's not just credit cards. Now the big topic is student loans. Student loans that's a huge problem in this country now. College is so expensive, and the idea always was, you take on those student loans because you're going to get a job. That's gonna be able to pay off those student loans within a reasonable period of time, and I think we're finding now that that's not necessarily the case. Is it worth it to be paying $50,000-$60,000 a year for college? In many cases, it's not. And I think you're finding parents sending their kids to state institutions, to community colleges, more so than the private schools now. And to me, I think that's a good thing. Trade schools, that type of thing.
The irony that I found in the college thing, the more you do it right, the less money you get. If you create a 529 or whatever that is account and load money into it, then that's counted. That's almost a disincentive to an institution giving you money. So the process seems to work in reverse,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you, Josh. It's, you know, the more debt you have, the more financial aid you're eligible for, the whole thing to me.
I remember
require a big change.
I remember going to North Shore Community College and hitchhiking to get to class.
Sure.
I mean, that's how way
back.
Absolutely.
Then, right. And what was it? $200 for tuition per semester?
Yeah,
something
yeah.
like that.
The amazing thing is that I could make an 8 o'clock class in Beverly when I had to hitchhike to get there, and I struggled to get out of bed to make an 8 o'clock class when I lived on campus in North Adams. So. that was many many now decades ago. Anyway,
right, yep.
But I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the very best of success, continued success in your career, and now as the president of the Cape Ann Savings Bank, and certainly all the good things that you do in the community with Rotary and other causes.
Well, thank you very much, Josh. It's been a pleasure being on with you and Rick.
Thank you. Take care now.
All the best. Yeah.
Find someone who sees your magic, your curses and your spells. It takes time to get to know you on good days or bad.
And in those moments, oh, you begin to grow.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Now with Josh Arnold, our next guest is Amanda Orlando Kesterson. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for having me back.
Well, now, I talked to you on some political and business stuff the other day, and you happened to mention that you're seeking office for a position that recently became vacated in the Republican Party. Tell us what that is and about that position.
Sure. So the Massachusetts Republican Party is made up of 80 state committee members who are the elected representatives of districts across the state, and they meet four times a year to have meetings and make decisions for the Massachusetts Republican Party. And the job of the state committee person from each district is to encourage the growth of the Republican Party and to encourage the growth of city and town committees in their respective district. So in our district, which is the first Essex and Middlesex district, we have a state committee man and a state committee woman for each district. Our state committee man is Luke Noble, and our state committee woman is Angela Hudak.
And Angela recently resigned from her position. She actually had some, you know, personal events in her life, which and she decided to move to be closer to family in North Carolina. So she had to give up her seat, obviously. And when that happens, because it's in the middle of her term, they open up the Massachusetts Republican Party needs to find a replacement. So they open up the seat to anybody who wants to run for it. And I put my name in there to do that. And that's so that's what I actually announced this week, earlier this week, that I was running for that position.
Great. And so what does the election process look like for you for that kind of position?
So because it's a – it's Angela was elected on the ballot. She was – the state committee members are elected every 4 years – when Massachusetts Republicans vote in the primary, in the presidential primary. So last March of 2016, when all of us Republicans went and voted in the Massachusetts Republican primary, Angela was elected in a contested election to be our state committee woman. Luke was elected to be our state committee man. I actually was Luke Noble's campaign manager for that campaign. So I, you know, I was following it very closely. And because this would be basically, I would be, if I won, I would be filling her term. The process of the replacement is that it's a caucus. The caucus will be held on Monday, June 26th at 7 o'clock. It'll be held in Ipswich, which is sort of halfway in the district, sort of in the middle. And the voters are whoever is a member of a city or town committee in this district. So there are 17 cities and towns in our district. 14 of those towns have a Republican town committee, and so the people who are official members of those town and city committees can vote for the replacement. So it's not a lot of people. I think it's somewhere in the range of 100 or 115 potential voters who are going to come to this caucus and vote for Angela's replacement.
So the 115 eligible voters, do you ever get 100% attendance?
No, we're not going to get 100% attendance.
So, if it's June 3rd, do you say, or
June 26th?
June 26th, I'm sorry. And, you know, just coming up before 4th of July weekend, what's a safe number? Would you get 30 or 40% of that?
Yeah, I would think we'd get more than that. People are very actually focused on it because we have the upcoming gubernatorial elections in 2018. You know, Governor Baker will be running for re-election. And it's the state committee members' job to get the town and city committees organized to support the efforts of the governor's re-election campaign, in addition to other Republicans on the ballot, state Senate candidates, state representative candidates, you know. So people are pretty focused on it. I think we'll get a higher percentage than 30 or 40. I would put it closer to 60% we'll probably get coming to the caucus. The town chair people are very motivated to get their members there because they want their town represented in voting for the replacement. So they're pretty motivated. I think we'll get about 60%.
So 45 votes probably wins this?
Yeah, it's a very small number.
And so what kind of a campaign does a person run for that? And you have competition, or are you running unopposed, or is anybody else running?
There's another Republican who has put her name in, and she is running against me. She is actually also a member of the Gloucester Republican City Committee. So there are two.
See, all that activism that you've generated enthusiasm for the Republican Party, you're creating competition for yourself.
Exactly right. That's exactly what I've done. But, you know, that's good, though. I think that competition's important. I always think every election should be contested because people need to hear different viewpoints, and they need to know that they have a choice. I think that that's very, very important. And I'm happy that there's a competitor. You know, I like it that way. And, you know, and she has a different, and her name is Diana Ploss. She has a different skill set than I do because her experience in politics comes from she was a volunteer for the President's Trump campaign. So that's where she derives her experience from. My experience is in running local elections and building the local committee. So, and she's a recent member of our committee. She joined a couple months ago, and obviously I've been a member for, you know, 5 years, and I was the treasurer of our committee, and I now am the chairwoman of our committee. So we have, you know, as a in Gloucester, the Republicans have really been active, and we've grown a lot, and we've generated a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement and a lot of fun. We have a great committee, and it's very positive. And so I'm very proud that, like you say, I've built it to a point where there is, you know, a competition for this seat, because that's how it should be.
Now, so how do you, what kinds of methodologies would you employ to reach out to the people who are going to be voting on June 26th? You obviously have the master list of delegates that will go attend those caucuses. What kind of dynamics do you envision the campaign to include?
Well, I think that because it's a small number of potential voters, I have the opportunity to actually meet and talk with most of them, because, you know, during the course of the campaign, I'll be attending town committee meetings. You know, where as the chair people gather their members together, they say, you know, come meet this candidate. And a lot of them I already know, because I've been working on a Republican city committee for 5 years. And in the course of, we have regional events that we attend, when we support candidates for Essex County Sheriff, or when we support Bruce Tarr, or state representative candidates for the district, you know, a lot of different members of those committees go to those events, and so I already know many of them, you know, personally, and have talked with them and have worked with them even on host committees for candidates.
So they're on, so when you open up your phone, they're already on your phone list.
A lot of them are on my phone, yeah, and that's not to say that they will absolutely 100% decide that I'm the best person for the job, but it does help that they've already met me and know me, and that, you know, they, or at least know of me, or, you know, where you have a connection in some way. So, you know, I think the campaign is it's kind of a nice campaign, because really both candidates are focused on different perspectives on how to grow the Republican Party. And the voters get to decide which perspective they like best and which perspective they feel will be most successful. And that's a nice position to be in, because often Republicans don't have anybody to run for positions in Massachusetts. So it's a little different than your normal campaign.
Well, I'll tell you, I grew up in East Gloucester, and I remember the saying, okay, this didn't happen when I was growing up, but there was a time in East Gloucester where they said, if you ran a dog against a Democrat, the dog would win. That's how much the demographics in Gloucester have changed. So, I mean, Massachusetts has not always been, we think of it now, the Kennedy influence and so forth has predominated as a Democratic state. And I was one of those people who stood up at a student government convention and said, don't blame us, we're from Massachusetts, when Nixon was president and all of that. But all that aside, There have traditionally been strong Republican constituencies within the state.
Well, there still are. You know, I think it's a fallacy. I said this. I've been the last week that I sort of opened up my campaign, and I've been going to some meetings. I've said repeatedly that I believe that we have a very strong district, and in our district we have our Republican state senator, Bruce Tarr. We have three Republican state representatives, Lenny Mira, Brad Hill, and Brad Jones. We have a Republican governor, Republican lieutenant governor, and a Republican president. So Massachusetts is in no way dead as far as Republican politics. In fact, our district is very successful. It's one of the most successful districts in the state. And we need to build on that success and recognize that it is success and that we can grow from it. And I agree with you that Massachusetts, the people of Massachusetts are not as liberal as the politicians, and there are a lot of very good Republican candidates who have done very well here and can continue to do very well here. I think a lot of it has to do with organization and messaging, and I don't think traditionally Republicans are good at that. And one of my campaign focus areas is in helping town and city committees to better message in a more positive fashion.
The observation I'd make about Republicans versus Democrats is that Republicans will battle it out, but once somebody is picked, they'll get behind that person, and everybody pushes that for that person. I don't see, at least in Massachusetts, that that happens among the Democrats. There's a tendency, and I'm a former office holder in the Democratic Party locally, and is, well, our person didn't get in, so we'll let the Republican get in, and then we'll beat the stuffing out of them for 2 or 4 years, and then get our person in then.
Yeah, it's a very, that philosophy actually does exist on the Republican end sometimes, and it's very, very bad. You know, we don't want that. I mean, I'm not saying that anybody should ever support anyone just because of a letter next to their name. That's not what I'm claiming. But I think when you are, particularly in my position as chairwoman of the Republican City Committee, you know, let democracy work when you have a primary. Like, for example, the presidential primary. We had members that really weren't, they really didn't like President Trump or candidate Trump at the time. And they said, I won't support him. And I kept telling them, listen, there's 17 Republicans running for that seat. So vote for the person, you know, in the primary that you think is best. But whoever emerges on top has won that nomination fair and square, and it's incumbent upon us to support him or her because we are the Republican, we are the local Republican arm, and that's where they need to find their base of support. You know, he's part of us.
We're running out of time, and we'll have to talk about Donald Trump offline. But okay. Thank you for being. President Trump on offline. Thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold.
Thanks, Josh. Have a great day.
Take care.
Local musicians here carrying us through another Trending Now. Chelsea Berry in the background. What do you got lined up for the future?
We have a show next week, and I've got a couple people I'm waiting to hear on for that one. Then we're off for 2 weeks. And then we are back for the 23rd and 30th of June. And on the 30th, we have Susan Wernick will be our guest for the first 30 minutes.
All right. And don't forget, we have Connections on Thursdays now. That's at 11 a.m. And we'll use your expertise, I think, hopefully for some political history and some
sure.
political background. We're lining up our left-right center. It's not a dice game. The left-right center, we're going to hopefully include Amanda. We've got Mike Schultz from Peabody and Greg Verga, hopefully in the middle, and we will be having a roundtable from time to time, and maybe a conference call. But we're not going to be adversarial. We're going to find solutions locally. That's going to happen here on the North Shore. On Fridays, of course, it's Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Mondays, it is North Shore Sports Night at 7 p.m. Now we're not going to have a show this week due to the holiday. And then the following week, I've got something. There's a lot going on with high school graduations, and so I'm not even sure we're going to have a show in the following week. But we'll have our sportscast going hardened. And we got sports every single morning with Bill Newell and every day on our website with interviews and videos with Bill. So check us out from time to time, at least 2 or 3 times a day, and spread the word, MSO News Sports. For Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. We'll be right back.